Hello, everybody. Welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, joined by my colleague, Kurt Hoge. He is the Brewers reporter from the Journal Sentinel. Kurt, we're gonna have to make this snappy because I got a White Lotus finale to get to tonight. It's like 90 minutes long. I need that. So
I don't know that is tonight. So I still haven't caught up to last week's episode.
Oh, you got a ways to go.
And I can't watch it without my wife. I'll be in big trouble. And there's no way to like sneak watch it because Max will tell me that you've watched this.
Yes.
I wish there was a button on these streaming platforms. It would be like the don't incognito. Show incognito. Yes. Don't show my partner that I watched this. That sounds really bad.
I want to
watch it and not get in trouble for watching it without her.
That is so funny.
The incognito browser.
I think it's possible the key to happiness is having a wife who doesn't share any of your interests, and then you guys don't watch any of the same shows. So there's never anything like that in my household.
We don't have like any. She wants to come on the pod, by the way. So we do need to schedule that. Like she really wants to be on the pod.
Karen, visit the pod. Let's do this.
Yeah, she's not going to listen to it. She doesn't listen to it. She just wants to talk about her life.
Of course not. Okay. I mean, that sounds fine.
But anyway, we don't have like shared interests. Not really. All the things that she likes to watch and do are not the things I like to watch and do. She's big into gardening, except the White Lotus. I like sitting around and watching sports. She hates sports, which is funny because that's all I do for work.
That's true.
Here we are.
I've heard that. My wife does like sports. She does. She just doesn't like them to the level that I'm talking about them. So I think she has.
But that's good. That's good. That's
agreed.
Good.
Yes. Yes. And furthermore, we just like she likes reruns of old CBS shows like procedurals and you know like old comedies. Like she's watching Modern Family episodes that she's seen four times. Like no, I'm watching HBO programming. That's just who I am. So you do you. You do you. Love that for you. And I'll watch my shows and it'll be great.
90s and HBO programming. J.R. Radcliffe.
That's
in
true.
A nutshell.
I mean,
you're going priest today with your polo. I see.
Yeah. I had a t-shirt on that wasn't pod appropriate, so went with the nice button up today. Kurt, I had a little. The Brewers had a great week. They won.
There we are.
They won five of seven games. I had a little crisis moment. I was thinking to myself, are we a better podcast when they're bad? You know, because this was a great week for them, and I feel like I don't know if it's like there's as much juice for this one.
Yeah, so I was thinking about this driving around Friday night, maybe, where I was like, you know what? I feel like one of us tapped the brakes at least a little bit on the 0-3 start, which then became 0-4 last week. We really should have recorded on Monday after they went to 0-4. That would have been even better content.
Is this the worst team in baseball history? ? That's where we were headed.
No, that's the Braves.
Oh yeah, sorry.
They stink.
The former Milwaukee Baseball.
Anyway, I'm glad I tapped the brakes a tiny bit. I think I did. But I was like, man, we probably went too far with are they actually going to be okay? And then I was thinking, I was like, you know what? I don't think we went far enough. I think we should have declared the season over.
We are the Jane Lynch meme come to life. We're gonna overreact negatively so hard.
I'm gonna create a podcast so toxic.
we could find toxic lining to this. I mean, three of their five wins came by one run. Their offense has not been good. Their pitching staff is an absolute shambles. So we'll talk about that. But it was, unfortunately for this podcast, a very nice week for the Milwaukee Brewers. They get back to even at 5-5 after a terrible first four games of the year, including a dreadful home opener, an 11-1 loss to Kansas City. They respond with great work from a couple people who we will talk about, Chad Patrick and Tyler Alexander. Hello. Some tremendous work from guys that nobody was counting on before the season. We will spend time on those guys. I do want to start with the starting rotation, because the starting rotation, brother, is in some kind of disrepair. That does not mean that they are losing games, but you've got Freddy Peralta, who looked tremendous in his start this week. At the very top, he's still there. Things are going great through two starts for Freddy Peralta. The next six guys that you counted on to make starts for this team are all injured. The newest is Nestor Cortez. On Sunday, he went on the injured list. It sounds like it's a minor deal. Anytime we're talking about the throwing arm, I do not think it's a minor deal, but you know, we did know that he was going to be taking some time away for paternity leave anyway, so maybe this is okay. I don't know. He just came off a great start, oddly enough. He's down. Aaron Civale was lost last week. You know, we know about Ashby and Hall gone before the season. Jose Quintana is not ready. We expect to see him this week, but
he better be.
Yes, Brandon Woodruff was already gone, but like he's obviously not back, and they are going to start Tobias Myers. They are going to start getting these guys back over the course of the next couple weeks, including this week, and that is good. But Kurt, I wonder, do you have a map in your head of how in the world they negotiate the next 2 weeks of pitching with the guys that they have? Elvin Rodriguez has made two starts. He does not look like a big league starting pitcher at this point, very early. But
however, guess who gets another start?
They can't even call anybody up off the 40 man until Friday because of the rules of the system, unless there's an injury. So like, Lord knows you don't want another injury. So they're kind of stuck with the guys they got right now. I don't know how they get through this, Kurt.
I don't like that rule, first off.
Like, I don't understand. I mean, it's to prevent them from stashing guys, I guess. I don't really know what that gets you.
I understand it sort of during the season. It keeps the shuttle from like being a total shuttle. I get it. Although we kind of did away with that to a degree with the, you know, the maximum amount of call-ups you can have. I just don't get it at the beginning of the season. I just don't. This is when injuries allow you to make moves, but this is when injuries happen. And this is when I just feel like remember a few years ago when they had, you could have 28 players on the roster until the beginning of May. It was like a post COVID.
Yes, I do.
Speculation. I'm not saying do that, but like the heart of that is you're just carrying a few more pitchers early in the year. And now it's like the Brewers are, and other teams probably are too. They're kind of in a pinch because they can't call guys up, and the Brewers are certainly in a pinch because that this week it sounds like, and this is just sort of rumblings, Elvin Rodriguez is going to have to make another start. I would guess they bump Tyler Alexander up a day. Elvin gets the other start in Colorado in addition to Freddie, and then Jose Quintana comes, and then you can sort of reassess. I am not sure that Coors Field is going to be the place where Elvin Rodriguez needs to go to AAA to, oh yeah, let's get this guy more starts. I think he has to start. He has to be the guy to start unless you go off the 40 man in some capacity and then create a spot. So it'll be him. I'm like the mapping out is not super duper difficult after that. Assuming Tyler Alexander can still pitch well as a, you know, in start, which I'm sure he'll be able to maintain his spot for the next 2 weeks. Chad Patrick, who knows if it's going to be this great going forward. He's going to face a really good lineup the next time out against the Diamondbacks, so you'd expect a dip there, but he can stay in the rotation for a little bit. He's sure shown enough to deserve that. And then you're kind of just wondering about the Elvin spot, and by that point you could go to guys who are on the 40 man like Logan Henderson, Carlos Rodriguez, another option there. That's basically the extent of that. And then not too long after that, you're looking at Tobias Myers, Savali back. So they've endured some of it, not all of it.
They did an interesting thing on Sunday, roster-wise, where Nestor Cortez, who did go on the injured list, that enables them to bring someone up, which they did. They brought up Grant Wolfram, a reliever who has not made his major league debut. They then optioned him Sunday night. Now we could read between the lines real easily. This is not hard because they can't just call anybody up since they just blew the chance to add somebody because of an injury. That roster move was Wolfram. Now there is no other injury. It's going to be Nick Mears. He's going to be activated off the injured list. He'll be available. So he should be in Colorado helping out this team by Tuesday. That's the first
revenge series for Nick Mears. Let's freaking go.
Can pitchers even get revenge in Coors Field? I feel like that's just, you just gotta bite the bullet and hope that you get a zero.
You hope you don't play.
Yeah, so that's exactly right.
The bullpen rings and you're like, no, it's that guy.
But I mean, theoretically, they could have added a starter instead of Grant Wolfram and used him in relief if they had to. They're just not there yet. They don't want to do that. They want to, I guess, give Logan Henderson seasoning.
This would have been the opportunity to call up a starter, and then you could have figured out something to do with Mears. You could have kept Mears on the shelf until Thursday and then activated him once the other guy starts and then option the other guy back. So, yeah, there was some roster finagling they could have done, but ultimately the Brewers wanted Wolfram there just in case, with the bullpen a little thin on Sunday. I always think these are the guy gets called up for a day and doesn't get in the, like Tobias Myers, that happened to him last year, and then he gets sent back. Sometimes they get in the game. Kevin Hergate, yeah, that happened. That happened to him the first time. Yep. At least he had like pitched in the big leagues, I think. James Meeker got in the big leagues and then got DFA'd. So thankfully he got in the game, but if that had been a 7-5 game, he doesn't get in. So I don't know. Just a weird baseball thing. Grant Wolfram will probably be back. He's on the 40 man.
I think Hergate was in line to be like, I don't know, the 1,000th Brewer.
The 1,000th Brewer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he got sent down. And then Jared Koenig actually became the 1,000th Brewer.
I was just going to say that's actually more memorable than Jared Koenig being the 1,000th Brewer.
Yes.
I did not remember that it was Jared Koenig.
That was the Brewers version of the torpedo bats, things that we will not be thinking about at the end of the year, but we were thinking about in that very specific moment. There's so much of that in the course of a baseball season. So
Willie Adames, three-run home run record.
Oh, that's right. That three-run home run. Most home runs by a shortstop in Brewers history. That was a thing?
That's right. It was a thing.
Very important things. I'm not surprised they didn't, because you know, if somebody gets hurt, then Wolfram stays and they don't need him to stay because Nick Mears is coming back. Like I guess it makes some sense, but they are locked in here to another start for a couple starts from people that you are just did not expect to rely on. Elvin Rodriguez has not been it through two very ugly starts. Meanwhile, Chad Patrick and Tyler Alexander have really delivered. Now, I keep forgetting. I always forget to tease my interviews at the start of one of our podcasts, but I actually have a conversation with Chad Patrick, who is kind of one of the man of the hour here. One run in 10 innings, 10 big league innings over a couple starts here. Very impressive stuff from him. So had a chance to catch up with him after the first start. This was not an interview from Sunday. So you don't, you know, as we're talking and you can hear this in the conversation, we don't know what happens in his second start, but very cool opportunity there. So that's coming up at the end of this conversation. I wonder what you think of both Chad Patrick and Tyler Alexander. Tyler Alexander went 5 2/3, no hit innings, which I don't think there's any version where we saw that happening. But certainly an excellent spot start. Got the Brewers ended up losing that no hitter in the seventh against the Reds. They win that game 3-2. Just a really, really solid, no way around it, solid performance. And Patrick has been really quite good. Now, Tyler Alexander was brought here, I think, with the idea that he could start games. It didn't seem like that was their plan for him at the beginning until some of these injuries sunk in. And Patrick obviously wasn't on this roster initially, but then, you know, became someone they had to rely on. And I don't know what to make of him. He's a guy that they like. They wouldn't have added him to the 40 man when other options were available this offseason. I guess I didn't think of him as somebody who could be a starter all season long, but two starts, short ones, but two starts definitely leave you feeling confident. Tell me what you think the long-term prognosis is for these guys. Could they stay involved here heavily in the rotation, even as guys start to come back?
Possibly, yeah. I wouldn't have expected Tobias Myers to make, 23, 24 starts like he did a season ago. So it's quite possible. I still think the Brewers have so many options that are still working their way back. I mean, you mentioned all their names. It's a cavalcade of these guys that are hurt that ultimately Chad Patrick will probably not make 20 starts.
No,
but I have been interested in what I've like. It has felt a little bit like Tobias Myers redux watching him. They're different for sure different, although they, you know, both have the fastball cutter, but Chad Patrick's like hammering the cutter, and it's a good pitch. It's a really good pitch, and he locates it well and can use it in different spots. So it's like, oh yeah, okay, I can see what your path is here to being a somewhat reliable big league starter. Maybe even more than that after what we've seen the last couple of days. Like, he just kind of understands understands pitching, understands how to sequence his stuff, and spots it pretty well as well. Like, these guys did not face good lineups. The Reds might stink really bad. That offense also right now it's playing, they're playing terribly. The Brewers caught them at the absolute right time. Truly. And Pat Murphy kept saying all week about how good the Royals are. And yeah, they made the playoffs last year. Of course, they made what, the ALDS? They won a playoff series. I'm not like buying the Royals as a good team again. They have some good play. Bobby Witt's incredible. Sal Perez can still hit. And they have probably more guys in their lineup than the Reds are. I'm like, yeah, this guy can beat you. I'm not super enthused by the Royals offense. So sorry, I just threw wet blankets on them. It was pretty fun watching those guys. I mean, they gave up a combined one run in three starts on this homestand. This was the concern. Can they win these games with who knows who is pitching and making starts? They did.
They did.
They got back. I believe we said, if you know, the 4-3 homestand would be okay, and that gets you back to 4-6, and you're like, all right, let's move past it. And they're 5-5 now with a 5-2 homestand. So I think you got to be really happy with what you got from them. And I'm not saying Chad Patrick's going to be like an ERA under 3 guy this year. I don't even know if he's an ERA under 4 guy this year. But like, that's a big league depth starter, no doubt. He's going to take the ball. You know what you're getting from him. It's like it's a variation of the Colin Ray, essentially.
Yeah. If he has an ERA even like slightly under 4, 3.95 or whatever,
that's fantastic.
Tie me up, right?
That's fantastic. Yeah. And Alexander can give you, like, Patrick is a starter. Alexander, though, can move in and out here and there and mix and match a little. You know, he's a veteran who's, I sound like Murph now. He's a veteran who's done it all before, but he is. So that's why they signed him.
Another option if they decide they need it. And again, things loosen up here on the 11th. On Friday, they'll be able to add Quintana, which they will certainly do. And they'll be able to add anybody off the 40-man roster. So it's really just this Colorado series, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, where they're still kind of stuck in this box of using the guys that they have. They could add somebody, like you said, off the 40-man, or somebody who's not in the organization at all. And you kind of sussed out on Wednesday, Mark Adonazio was speaking at Carroll University and mentioned the Brewers were looking at a new pitcher, a pitcher who's trying out for them, who had a Scott Boras client.
Toro.
Put some pieces together. Spencer Turnbull is the guy that's believed to be at the heart of that. We haven't heard anything, though, in a few days. So I got to think, you know, with
it's
the urgency that they had.
It's cooled. It's cooled a little. That's what I've heard. It's cooled.
Yeah. So
a bullpen is not a binding. Yeah. Bullpen is not a binding thing, but the Brewers are certainly out there scouring. And it's still a possibility. They would not view Spencer Turnbull necessarily as a starter right now, because just think about it. That would not make sense. And they've already got guys coming back and how long it would take him to get ready, but they could use him. Like, I think they should just go for it. Just like, go sign him. He can be good. He's not going to cost you a lot. You didn't spend any money in free agency anyway, outside of Quintana. So why not? What are you waiting for? And the bullpen too, this is the thing about it. You feel pretty good about 4 guys, maybe, which is more than I would have said last week, 4, maybe 5, but they're still carrying some weight at the back end or the front end, however you want to phrase it, of guys that are like, are you a big league pitcher?
Yeah, well, let's talk about those guys right now, because I got 2 names, Grant Anderson and
Connor Thomas. No, we're being positive, JR. We're being positive.
I have other things that I'll be positive about. I'm going to talk about Bryce Terang at some point.
Yeah, we should do that right now.
No.
Okay, Grant Anderson.
I have grievances first. Not grievances. I mean, Grant Anderson, you know, he started in the minors. He's brought up because of injury, and I don't think it's happening necessarily, at least not in
Have you seen like the stuff models on his fastball?
He's got funk, right? Like, he's got
the
movement.
The models love his fastball.
And the Brewers love themselves a fastball. So
JessOnline.com right now. Go read it. We don't even need to talk about it. Because it's on the website.
Deep dive.
Everything you need.
Kurt did a deep dive on the fastball stuff, which I don't want to spend time talking about that, because I do just want people to go read it. It's great. It's fantastic. The Brewers love them some fastballs. They use them all the time.
They love fastballs. Build. We joke. You build the entire boat out of fast. They have built the boat out of fastballs and fastball throwers. Okay, Grant Anderson.
I'm watching the Bucks game, and Giannis, who is not playing, is like sitting in the crowd. He's like in the front row, but it's with people who are just attending the game. Very interesting stuff. Oh,
there's like courts. That's one of the weird things about the NBA is like the courtside seats are like right there.
I know.
I think we should do that in baseball. That would be so fun. Three fans get sent to the dugout.
Oh, that would be amazing. That would be a great way to make money. The Brewers love making money. Let's talk to them about that. That is a great promotion. You could like cordon them off or something. There was a game Saturday night and somebody spilled a drink because AJ Green ran into them, and it cost like 2 minutes in crunch time to try to get, not two, more than that, like five to get that thing cleaned up. It's because people are just chilling, eating food right on the sideline, like they're on the bench or something. Interesting. Anyway, I lost my train of thought completely. Oh, Connor Thomas. Rule 5 guy. He has been asked to absorb two outings to this point, long-term outings when the team was behind. He definitely struggled hard. And, you know, two outings obviously is not enough to make a judgment, except that, A, this team is going to need reliable relievers because, like you said, there's only a certain number that you really trust at this point. B, he's not your typical Rule 5 guy. He is supposed to be big league ready. He never pitched before, but he's old enough and further along enough in his career that you'd expect him to be able to get guys out right away. And I don't know, man. I mean, like you said, is he a big leaguer right now? I mean, you never want to, you know, they gave up on Gus Varland for less, and Gus Varland had, I think, a little bit more of an intriguing profile. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like when the opportunity comes, which will be Friday, they should really start thinking this bullpen could use some new arms, I think.
Yeah. I was going to say on Connor Thomas, just one thought. I was like, they're using him in the Wei Chung Wong. Did I pronounce that right? The Wei Chung Wong rule.
Oh,
role.
Loved Wei Chung Wong. Yes.
They're using him in that exact same role. The only difference is he is the exact opposite type of Rule 5 pick. Like, you don't see.
Oh, no, they're both left-handed. Like they're both left-handed.
That's true. That is true. But that's not a good sign if you're the Rule 5 guy and they're like, yeah, we can't pitch you like ever. Yeah. So, the writing might be creeping up on the wall on that front.
It's a good visual.
And they're going to they're going to need roster spots, and it's going to sort of be like, oh, Tyler Alexander moves back to the bullpen, those sort of things. And
yes.
Craig Yoho is also sitting in Nashville right now, and I frankly just need it.
Let's talk about it real quick because we love a Yoho.
There's Craig Yoho, nine other more important stories here, but sure. Yeah.
No, not to me, Kurt. They could add him tomorrow because he's not on the
40-man. I'm sorry. That's on me. There are no more important stories than this.
They could add him tomorrow because he's not on the 40-man. But you know what? Here's why they're not gonna. Because there are 189 days in a major league season. And there are 187 days. There are 172 days that a player can be on a roster before they get a full year of service time. 172 days. If you were in the big leagues for that long, basically the whole season minus 2 weeks, you, congratulations, got a full year of service time. That comes into play because that means you are a full year closer to arbitration. Now, if Craig Yoho were to play, I don't know, 170 days instead of 172, he definitely does not get the full year. And since all the salary decisions are made in the offseason, that would have effectively mean the Brewers would get another whole year of him. He would be 4 years away from the nearest arbitration. He would instead of three. You're going to get to that threshold right about Saturday in Arizona. You're going to get to a point where Craig Yoho could come up and it would not end up being a full year once he is finally added to the 40-man roster.
It was Friday, 15 days.
Is it Friday? It might be. I don't remember. We did the math, but it is in that Arizona series. I think Friday is that last day, and then they need Saturday so that it's like 171. Yeah, because
he would be at 172. Sure, you're right.
So I think it is Saturday. So are we going to see him on Saturday or Sunday? Because feels like that could be a really interesting deadline.
Wow. I think it's great that you're throwing this idea out there as if the Milwaukee Brewers famously operate under the set of activity in which they do the exciting move.
Come it's on just now. Weird. He's such a weird we'll prospect
him,
because
we'll see him
he's
in like
not
the middle
a
big of
enough,
May. Come
we
on
will
now.
Not see him in the middle of May. Are you really going to
we
see
might.
Him? No, that's
what
crazy.
That's what I have to tell myself because the Brewers, like, anytime there's a potential to make a move, you're like, wait, is this how they're going to get Logan Henderson up for a start? And it's like, wait a second, Elvin's just going to start again. Oh, great. There's someone coming in the clubhouse chair. Who's it going to be? Oh, duh, it's Grant Wolfram. Like, this is what happens. So I'm just going to tell myself it's the middle of May. But there is no doubt in my, there was no doubt in my mind in spring training. There's even less doubt now. It's negative doubt that Craig Yoho should be up here.
Major League Baseball has put in all these things MLB has to you know, prevent teams from doing this. But it, like we talked about last week, if being on a prospect list makes it easier for the team to, easier for the team to look past these machinations, because there is some incentive to play those guys. But Craig Yoho, who could be very, very important for this team, is not on those lists. So there is really no incentive for the Brewers to bring him up at all before this date.
Well, except for he's one of your best relievers and you can win games with him. God
forbid.
Other
than you can win games. Yes.
God forbid.
But if you're the Brewers, which I don't want to be in this equation because I want to see Craig Yoho in a Milwaukee Brewers uniform. If you're
the
Brewers.
This is about me. Yeah.
This is about me. Always. That's what we bring to this podcast is self-centeredness. So if you're the Brewers, you say, we just went 5-5. We have a starting pitcher and we just went 5-5. Why would we make sure that Craig Yoho is here to throw 7 innings before he hits this threshold? How about we just wait one more series or one more week and we make it work after that? And you're right. He probably won't be up here during the Arizona series. He'll probably be up after that. I don't know if Super 2 comes into play here. Probably. I don't know. I don't know if they're thinking about that for a reliever. That's usually not that big a deal, but whatever. It'll probably be way later than we want it to be. But just so the Brewers know, their best relief pitcher is pitching in Triple A Nashville.
They're going to, like, if they get an extra year, sure, but are they going to keep a reliever 6 or 7 years anyway? No, they're not.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No,
also,
not even close.
Also, shout out to Chris Mehring right now, voice of the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers. He was texting me about Blake Burke, 117 mile an hour exit velo, shot me the text during the podcast and goes, oh, did I at least text you before you guys started recording your podcast tonight? So, no, love Chris. It. You did not text me before that. Shout out Chris. Shout out Javik Blake. Shout out all the minor league broadcasters. Jeff Hamm. Good dudes. Good broadcasters. What do you got on the offense, JR? That was a hard pivot.
Actually, let's go back to Blake Burke. I love going to a Timber Rattlers game. But let me tell you, when they do homer, when the single A prospects do homer, they're just wall scrapers, just like getting over that outfield wall. Blake Burke almost hit one to the highway. That was a bomb, an absolute bomb. And he made a diving play at first base today.
That fellow has some heft. He is right up your alley.
Yes, I have questions about his overall prospect potential. However, that was a bomb and a really nice day. We're not done talking about the minor leagues.
I want to talk about so many prospects right now because the low A, high A, and double A season just started, but we can't do that. The Brewers just went 5-2. The season has been saved. I'm not even exaggerating.
But they got lucky in all these games. They got lucky. We could talk about the minors now.
I'm like, you might be joking, but they did win.
I'm only half joking.
They won three one-run games. Yeah. They bludgeoned the Reds a couple times, but boy, oh boy, the Reds are down horrendous. They did win 3-1-run games. So yeah, no, you would actually probably be right if you said they got lucky because they easily could have gone 1-2 in those games. But here's why
I think they got lucky. I think they got lucky because the offense has been bad. They did win a walk-off game against the Royals in which Bryce Turang bunted. It felt like the bunt was the only way that the Brewers were going to win that game based on how they were swinging in that game. Jackson Chourio looked good, though. He homered, drove in a run in extras that prolonged the game until the 11th inning victory. They won a 1-0 game over the Reds. The first time since 1960, a team has lost 3 consecutive 1-0 games. The Reds offense just awful. Nestor Cortez went from allowing all of the home runs to allowing 1 run over 6 innings.
While he had an elbow strain.
Is that the single greatest pitching turnaround in recorded history? Because that first game was almost as bad as any outing ever. I don't imagine there is a better jump here.
I think it says more about the Reds.
That's what I'm saying.
We can be frank here. Yeah.
And then Chad Patrick, bless him, because we're really excited about that start. But like, I think the Reds should feel bad about not scoring any runs against the Brewers in that next game where it ended up being, I think it was 5-0 was that final. And then they win a close
You're thinking of the Tyler Alexander game, I think.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. The Royals are the ones who got Chad Patrick. But they should feel bad that they did not score runs against or hits against Tyler Alexander. And then they hold on for dear life. Trevor McGill, by the way, I said Craig Yoho is their best relief pitcher. I think Trevor McGill, who has been pretty great, is the best relief pitcher. But
Abner, that one Abner question mark? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Abner Uribe. Interesting.
This
interesting.
Is like, this is like 2023 Abner all over good. Again. That's it's my good. Favorite. My favorite part of the weekend, this is not even going to make three up, three down, so I got to say it now, was when he threw a 3-1 slider for a called strike to Spencer Steer. And it's the final batter of the seventh on Sunday. He's like doing the finger gun holster. It was 3-3-1 to make it 3-2. He's like going crazy because he landed this slider at the top of the zone.
Yeah.
And then he struck him out on the next pitch and went, it was very pumped up. It was incredible stuff.
He is such
it's must see TV. It's must see TV, as was coined by the program.
That's true. That's true. You did that. You coined that. Really, what I'm upset about.
So
there's a lot going on. His suspension is over. The Brewers needed it, and he has delivered big time since he's been back, which is huge. Really, one of the reasons they've been able to keep it together here. The offensive woes, I think what is concerning to me, or actually just annoying to me, is that spring training lies. Spring training lies. We know it lies. We tell ourselves this every year. But then William Contreras, Rhys Hoskins, Christian Yelich, and Joey Ortiz all have amazing spring trainings. And I start to believe, I believe, Kurt, that maybe they've discovered something. Those guys are having a real hard time, all of them. And, you know, Yelich had a really long home run this week that we can't discount. Contreras had a hit on Sunday. And, you know, it's not like they're collective zeros, but it is really, really rough for the core part of this offense, minus Jackson Churio at this point. And I don't know if there's anything that you've observed, any signs that you feel like this is just a short-term thing. I mean, we have no reason to think it's a long-term thing. It's still very early, but it's not great. Not going to win a lot of games, you know, if they have to survive with one run, you know, one run here, one run there, if those guys aren't hitting the ball.
So all that I really have to say about this is I'm done with spring training stats. I'm swearing to it right now. I might actually get it tattooed on my chest.
Would that be your first tattoo?
Doesn't matter. Oh yeah, I'm absolutely not a tattoo person.
Oh, neither am I. Yeah, my body's a temple.
At all.
Very large, hirsute, rotund temple, but it's a temple. I'm tatting this.
Temples come in all shapes and sizes.
They really do. Body of a god. Unfortunately, it's Buddha. I had that T-shirt anyway. We're talking about that offense.
I'm at an impasse. I'm like at an impasse professionally in far as spring training stats goes, because I'm there for 3 weeks and I have to make, this is the secret to the sauce. I'm laying it all the goods here. I have to make you think that what's happening down there matters. And in the process, sometimes I convince myself that's what's happening down there matters. And then the reality is none of it matters. And next year is the year where we tell ourselves, this doesn't matter. And we don't care what happens. We don't care that Christian Yelich has like a 1200 OPS in spring training coming off back surgery. We don't care that Rhys Hoskins shares the Mike Brasso Cup for Cactus League home run title. We don't care. That's going to be next year. I'm going to hold myself to it. I want you to hold me to it. Our podcasts are going to be terrible because we're going to be like, yeah, the only thing, everyone's healthy. All right, let's move on.
I wanted to care so bad because it is Yelich coming off of back surgery. How's he looking? It is Joey Ortiz finally a full year removed from this neck issue. It is Rhys Hoskins an extra year after ACL surgery. And they look great. And then you get to the, I mean, you know, we're still talking about a sample that is actually smaller in the regular season than it was in spring, but
true, it's getting pretty close. Very true. Very true. That was a good point, JR.
Nothing is real. Nothing is real.
Maybe that was another point right there that we're not even. So yeah, we're not going to react. We're not going to react to the fact that William Contreras is like 3-for-31. We're not going to do it.
It's so bad.
Simply not. So what, here's a question I have for you. Are there other avenues of life where people want to ascribe this much like meaning to something they know doesn't have meaning? Like we do it with spring training, we do it with training camp and football, like all these sorts of things in sports.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, Vinny Capra's hitting 400 in spring. I know that doesn't matter, but what if it does? I don't know. I feel like there's some sort of psychological thing that sports does to us in those in that regard, that like, I don't feel that in any other aspect of my life.
I want to say something medical, maybe like exercise. You know, you think you have to just invest a lot before you see any results, and maybe you see zero results. I don't know.
I was maybe going to go to the gym tonight. I don't know though.
It's really late. No one's going to the gym anymore tonight. We did it. We survived the week. It's
okay. That's fair. That's fair.
Day off on Monday. Brewers finally get a day off after a busy 7-day week here. So Bryce Terang is unquestionably the best offensive infielder on this team, given the sample that we have. He is also the reigning Platinum Glove defensive player. I say that both as a success story that you wrote about this a lot on Sunday at jsonline.com, that Bryce Terang is hitting the ball really well. It's also a condemnation, because that's not what you want if that's your best offensive infielder. But that is nonetheless.
Are we sure?
Well, actually kind of my question. Are we sure? Because, he has the game-winning bunt. He has two homers already this year. He's a big double on Sunday. He is hitting the ball as hard as he ever has. He looks really good. And you've heard me talk. I am not ready to say I think Bryce Terang is a great offensive player. But he is, I think he's number two on the team in WAR right now, which is obviously, that's not a real stat right now. We're not really thinking about that. But like,
he was last year too, though.
For a long time, for most of the season, before his offense finally caught up with him. So we're not going to fall into the trap of, oh, Bryce Terang is a great offensive player again. We thought he should be an all-star last year. And then he had like a OPS under 500. It wasn't maybe that low in the second half, but it was not good.
It was pretty low though. Yeah, it was pretty low.
I don't know. You're seeing stuff though, because you wrote about it at JS Online. There are some changes here that we could point to, I guess.
Yeah. Look, on the heels of describing a situation which we ascribe meaning to something that we know deep down doesn't hold meaning, Bryce Terang looks awesome.
He looks incredible. Why do we podcast? We can't even, we should just start our podcast on Memorial Day. We will review all the trends because we cannot make any declarative statements without the caveats. Anyway, keep going.
This is a stupid game we watch.
It's so stupid.
No, I'm not even caveats here. There are meaningful changes to Bryce Terang's offensive profile. And like I wrote about, they're coming without real changes to what he's trying to do. And that is kind of what gets me excited. Like, he's not selling out. He is striking out a little to a lot more this year. It's not a crazy high number, but it was like 25% or so after today. But like, he is not selling out the contact to try to access his power. Like, he's just kind of accessing it. And he was like, well, I'm stronger. And so, like, frankly, I'm not always like banking on Bryce Terang to provide me with some sort of insightful quote on what he's changed. But like, I actually don't know if he's changed a whole lot, other than his stance is a little different and he's swinging a little harder, but I'm not sure he's actually outside of just trying to be a little more aggressive in certain counts. I don't know if he's specifically going for more damage. It's just happening. And I think that's pretty exciting. He is swinging harder, like I said, and he's hitting the ball harder. And sure, it's 10 games, so not trying to get too worked up. And now the next 10 games could be, dinkers to third base and little, bloop singles and flyouts to center. Very well could happen. But I just love how it's all line drives. It looks a lot better than last year when he got off to a really, really good start and it was like bleeders through the middle that no one got a glove on. It's a totally different profile. I mean, he's gonna, after Sunday's game, he's got to be like in the top 10 percentile of average exit velocity. So
incredible. That's just such a massive change. Great moment on Wednesday before his walk-off bunt. The Brewers had stranded a couple runners at third with nobody out to that point, and they had another runner at third with one out, and the Royals brought in the infield, and Pat Murphy comes out and is talking to Bryce Terang, and you're sitting next to me at American Family Field. You're like, oh, there it is. Like, they're gonna bunt, right? Like, that's the conversation. And sure enough, first pitch drags it perfectly. I mean, I am not a bunt person. We know this. We've talked about this, but that was as perfect a bunt as it could have been. So perfect that the pitcher, like, in his confusion, tried to get Terang out at first, which didn't work, but even if it had, what does it matter? That would have been the second out. The winning run has scored. The game is over. I was even confused. I'm like, what? What is there a reason to make that play? Like, it was.
I was pretty sure there was only one out. I was pretty sure it was. Yeah. It was such a good bunt.
So perfect.
Such a, like, I am still chasing that. What had the action that ball had as it got to the grass? I am still chasing that in golf. Like that perfect checkup. It rolled and then it just stopped.
Yeah.
It just checked up completely. If I ever get that on the green, I think I might walk away and quit right there. It was a great bunt. A lot of bunting this week, JR, but we can't get to that unless we're going to three up, three down, in which we can't get to it because
you got another bunt.
We got things to talk about. We got bunts to talk
about. All right. Let's do it. Without further ado, let's go into some of the more granular details from the week. Here it is. It is three up, three down.
Let's talk about bunting. Let's do it. We got to talk. It was a great, I mean, look, so much bunting at the ballpark. It's home opener, so it's all over. And then on the field, these baseball players deliver it to us in bite-sized doinked packages. Stoinks, I guess, go to the outfield, so.
I tried to find another word for bunt as I was writing about it, and I just couldn't, like, I couldn't come up with one that I thought would fit, you know?
Yeah, no, doesn't
dinked,
work.
Dunked. No. Some of those words sound dangerous. I don't know.
Yeah, you just got to go with bunt. Okay, so we talked about the Bryce Terang bunt on the walk-off. Totally made sense in that spot for sure, especially against a lefty.
For sure.
What were the Brewers doing? What was Joey Ortiz doing on Sunday? And that might not even be the bunt situation that came to mind people's mind first off from this week. There was the Reds one on, Thursday, where they bunted left on right with Vinny Capra to move guys to second and third with Rhys Hoskins running and noted ground ball hitter Joey Ortiz was due up next.
Yeah.
Confusion. Confusion runs amok in my head in that situation. But nevertheless, I still don't know what Joey Ortiz was going for on Sunday. First and third.
Nobody out.
The Brewers are winning at this point, and it's still like early-ish in the game, right? Was that the fourth inning, fifth inning, third inning?
Fifth inning. Maybe. Yeah. It might have been the fifth. I don't know.
He gets up.
Clearly a safety squeeze.
He gets up 2-0, but like, I don't know how well, we didn't ask Murph about this last game. I don't know how well that was relayed because Freely didn't get a great jump on it. So Ortiz showed bunt earlier in the count. So like they're now ready for it. And then he gets ahead 2-0, automatic strike on him. So it's 2-1. And then drops down another bunt while he's still in an advantage count, but less of an advantage count because he wasn't paying attention. Gets the runner over to second, but it's not a great bunt because Joey Ortiz is not he's not Bryce Terang or Christian Yelich with the bunting. We have not seen that. So the guy from third doesn't score. And then to make things even better, Ollie Dunn does get the squeeze bunt down in a situation, though, where that one actually made a little more sense.
Well, what didn't make sense about it was that it was about to roll foul, and Christian Encarnacion Strand just picked it up and basically conceded a run, basically allowed the run to score. Super weird.
Yes, that. So it probably shouldn't have worked there either. The Brewers went with back-to-back squeeze bunt attempts. I don't know if we're ever going to see that again this year from any team in baseball. Back-to-back squeeze attempts when the first one failed. Oh man, yeah. We are, this podcast is so back, JR. We're talking about bunting.
We got bunting. We're wondering
why the Brewers are bunting so much.
So that's your first one. I have another one. Actually, that's going to be my number one on three or three down, is a different bunt entirely. A bunt offered by the Cincinnati Reds by Ellie De La Cruz. A bunt that attempted to break up the no-hitter, which is dangerous. Like, people get real excited when you try to break up a no-hitter. I don't know if that's still a thing. It's not like everyone knew Tyler Alexander was not going to finish nine innings of that game. So I don't know if people were really holding on to that no-hitter as a, you know, priceless commodity. But Ellie De La Cruz, and I get it because the Reds were struggling on offense so bad game after game after game, and they just needed something. And so he tries to bunt on Alexander to get the Reds on the board in the hit column. And Alexander, man, Tyler Alexander at 31 years old or whatever it is, jumps off the mound, makes a tremendous play, spins, gets Ellie De La Cruz out. Ellie De La Cruz can fly. We know this. And keeps the no-hitter intact, which again went into the seventh inning before Abner Uribe lost it. He was the second pitcher, got a couple outs attached to the end of Alexander's outing. What a play. What a great play. I mean, just a great night for Tyler Alexander. Like, you know, he was a spot starter. I mean, the Brewers do have a spot starter in Odell Jones back in the 80s who went into the ninth inning with a no-hitter and was just out of gas and unable to do anything with it. You know, modern day baseball, you're not making it to the ninth if you're a spot starter, but the work he gave them was invaluable. Like, you really, really need an outing like that when you are struggling as bad as they are health-wise. And just a tremendous night and a great play to cap it all off.
Where do you stand on a bunt to break up the no-hitter in the sixth, like, we'll say sixth inning or later?
Yeah. So like I said, I think it just doesn't, it just isn't as important to me anymore because, and I don't know if it ever really was, like, I am all for teams doing whatever they can to get a hit. You know, I know there are some announcers who feel very, very strongly about it, that it is cheap or whatever, but like, do no hitters matter to people anymore? I mean, can you name the last pitcher to throw a no hitter? Because I can't off the top of my head, but even if I could, it's probably four guys for like the Houston Astros or something. I mean, there just aren't that many of those singular performances where you really, you know, want to admire it or whatever. It's just not something that people, I think, are that fired up about anymore. I think we maybe moved on. Teams I know have moved on because they will absolutely pull a guy from a no hitter, you know, if it means that they're going to, you know, stick to whatever plan they have to try to win the game that night.
So I can recall, now I've looked this up, I can recall all the no-hitters from last year once I see the list. Like, I remember watching them, and it was pretty cool in the moment. So I don't want to poo-poo no-hitters because I think they're pretty awesome, especially when one pitcher does
it.
Like, Blake Snell doing it last year was pretty sick because, like, you know, the entire knock on him is he can't go deep in games.
Doesn't work deep.
And The knock is correct. He cannot do that, because he putzes around with some of the nastiest stuff in baseball and can't command it. But like Ronel Blanco, I remember watching that one on my couch one night. Dylan Cease, my in-laws were actually over, and we watched like the end of that game on TV. And then Blake Snell, I was on the road covering something. So I don't know. Something about it still, like, when Ellie squared around in the moment, my reaction was like, oh, that's cheap. And so I don't want to be like old head unwritten rules. Like, win the game, try to win the game, try to score some runs. That's exactly what they're trying to do. So I don't hate it, but I just don't think I would do it.
Fair enough.
It feels like you're getting, like, if it comes early in the game, fine. But at that point you're like, oh, we don't have a hit. I'm not going to try to hit my way to a hit. I don't know. Feels like running from the smoke to me. That's what it is. I'll call it.
Yeah. And I think, you could see Ellie De La Cruz, their best hitter, you know, you could see this both ways. Like, oh, your best hitter is laying down a bunt. That feels like an action to try to break up the no hitter and not to actually play a game of baseball. On the other hand, the Reds had been so bad on offense. They just needed something. They were cusp of a fourth straight shutout. They have to do something.
I think it very much is an action to try to win a game. And that's why I think I'm ultimately fine with it, but it just doesn't feel like it's contradictory. It is, but doesn't feel like you're competing.
Yeah, that's right. All right. What's your number two?
Jackson Chourio's defense this week.
It was okay
much better. Week. He had the diving play to start the ninth inning of Piamp's save in the one run game on Thursday. And then I don't remember what game it was. Maybe it was one of the Royals wins. Maybe it was a blowout or something. I don't even remember. He made a fantastic play going back to the wall in right field. I don't remember the circumstances, but I do remember that play was something else. Because we haven't always seen Chourio making those plays going back on balls, especially. He did in the wild card round before he botched the next play. But of course, brought back to mind the play in Miami last year. Charlie McGill pitching, Otto Lopez hitting, tying run in scoring position where he didn't dive for the ball. Should have at least laid out and given it all his effort, and he didn't do that. So to see him confidently track down that ball in the ninth inning with Piamps pitching, I thought that was not nothing.
Yeah, I think, you know, his superpower, we've talked about this, is adjusting. It feels like he's just so good at struggling and fixing it fast. And that's why when he struck out five times to start the year, I wasn't the least bit worried. I really wasn't, because even though that was a very bad performance, you know, he just doesn't let failure, you know, stack up on him. He fixes it. And the defense, I feel like, is similar. You know, like, his defense was, it was a mixed bag, to say, to be nice, last year. I mean, there were some really good plays and there were some really weird ones. And I think that there's still a learning curve, but we are seeing more confidence in the outfield. You know, it was even a play that struck me as a ball got hit right at him and he caught it casually. Like, he caught it the way that you would play catch with your, you know, with a loved one, just real, like, routinely kind of just let it fall into the pocket of his glove. That felt like a confidence thing that maybe I wasn't sure was there over the first year of his career. So yeah, we're seeing some nice stuff out there. That diving play in the 1-0 game was really quite large, I thought. My number two is the Uecker stuff. You know, I don't know if anything really struck you different, any particular way about the Bob Uecker ceremony is probably too strong, but the ways that the Brewers tried to remember him in the home opener this week, you saw a lot of signage. There's a giant banner up in the fourth deck, which is paired with some construction that the Brewers are doing, but it also is a perfect location because the line on it is that must be in the front row, which he is in the far upper right field corner in that famous Miller Lite ad where he is, you know, believes he's headed to the front row and in fact ends up in the nosebleeds. Very funny spot that is quite iconic. I like that a lot. I think that was a really good touch. Really cool tribute video featuring a lot of the voices that he has worked with in the past. Jim Powell, Corey Provis, Pat Hughes, Joe Block. I thought that was neat. And, you know, obviously he's on everybody's mind and it showed. I thought they did a really nice treatment of him. And I think there's probably going to be more Uecker stuff as the season goes along.
Yeah, I agree. And then they had the private ceremony Wednesday as well, or private not ceremony, right, but an event. So I'm sure that was nice for those in attendance. A lot of former players were back, but that, a lot of Brewers people around. I'm going to close with the ballpark, JR.
Okay.
It seemed like there was not a lot of people there this week.
No, there were like sure some 20K. Like,
yeah. I mean, the opening day crowd, of course, was great. Yep. But yeah, I think the next two Royals games were sub 20K. Sunday's game was about 25, Saturday maybe a tick more than that. I don't remember off the top of my head. And then Friday was just over 20K, like 22 or so. So
yeah, it's
pretty sparse crowd. It's light. I looked this up just now. It's actually not a ton lighter than it was last year. The okay. Second home game of the year last year for the Brewers against the Twins, nonetheless, 17,800. Okay. The Friday game against the Mariners, this was the Andrés Muñoz walk-off walk. 23,000, right. That's a Friday night. That's like right around where it was on Friday. Saturday, throw that one out the window. It was 35,000, but I think that was one of the – it was probably that was some memorable giveaway. I don't remember what it was, though. Memorable giveaway, and Kurt doesn't know what it is. And stuff yes. There. And then Sunday was about exactly what it was this year, so –
yeah, I don't. Like I mean,
it's on par with what it was last year. But then again, the Brewers' attendance didn't blow anyone away last year either. They are not having the crowds that maybe we would expect there to be for winning teams.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this in the past. The slide is, we think, due to a lot of factors. Some of it is the TV situation. It's not easy unless you have cable or satellite to find the Brewers on TV. And I think they've just slipped down the hierarchy of things in people's lives in Milwaukee and Wisconsin. I think there's also just a lack of buzz that comes from success. That's just a natural thing where you expect this team to be good. And maybe you're not thinking about them in April or May or June because you've seen good teams before. And now you're waiting for what happens in October and maybe not getting there early in the season. You know, I think the ballpark experience is fine. I don't feel critical of it. It just isn't maybe, I don't know. It probably could be a little better. I don't think that's keeping people away though. I don't think that has a lot to do
with
it.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on it. We'll see if there is a drop over the course of the season. I mean, this team makes the playoffs and then doesn't have like rock star attendance. Feels kind of weird to me because playoff teams should, you know, the biggest season this team has had was, I believe, 2009, the year after they go, you know, they make the wild. There was just so much buzz. And I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, right.
But it was definitely after the year, a playoff run.
It's the year after. That's usually the one that generates.
Yeah, I think 2019. is what I'm thinking of. 2019,
the big ticket buzz. Yeah. Well, 2009 was probably great too, coming off the playoffs.
Sure, for sure.
And it's not a great sign to be where you were at the start of last year when, like, the Brewers were
very good.
No, the Brewers did make they made the playoffs. They were good in 2023. But it was a non-buzzy offseason, so you could understand why, like, they traded Burns, they lost Council. Interest was lower in the Brewers at the start of last year. I think people can easily gloss that over. So not great to be in the same spot you were at the start of last year. We'll see what ends up happening. But yeah, Brewers attendance is not like they probably still punch above their weight for the market, no doubt.
Do, for sure.
But they used to punch way above their weight.
Yeah. Even last year you still had Churio debuting and you had Rhys Hoskins added. You had a couple things this year. Like what's new? You know, you lost your shortstop and didn't really replace him. So like, what are you looking forward to that you haven't seen before? You know, you could wait till June or July. I mean, I don't recommend it because April and May are great times to get in games where there is a little more elbow room. I appreciate that. So I recommend these games, but yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. And my third and final before we move on here is I've got a new, so as you know, Kurt, I really love the 2023 Brewers draft class. And I have since it pretty much happened. I love talking about it. I love Craig Yoho is in this class. Brock Wilkin, who right now has struggled, but is still the
second name out of your mouth in the 2023 class was Brock Wilkin.
I am still a believer. I'm gonna go down with the ship on this one.
He had a couple awesome plays and in the field on Friday. Yeah,
there's a lot of names. There's a lot of names. You know, Brett Witrowski, Mike Bovey, a couple other guys that come to mind. But I got a new one. I got a new favorite. Well, not a favorite, but just like I'm in on Josh Adamczewski. He is at Carolina, single A. He is going to turn 20 years old in May. He is crushing the ball. He has always crushed the ball. He has really not struggled at all since they brought him in. Now he's been at rookie ball and, you know, very low levels, but he had a walk-off hit on Sunday. A solid smacked single down the right field line that won the game for the Mudcats. He is a dude and he's very young. And, you know, you've got, he's I think a second baseman pretty much exclusively.
Yeah. He's a second baseman. Yeah.
Sure. Sure. So, I don't know. We're talking about long-term here, but this 2023 draft class is one of my favorite things to think about, to talk about. And, I am very much in on Josh Adamczewski. Welcome to JR's fascination
street. It keeps doing things to you. I can't wait to look back at the 2023 draft class in a few years and be like, holy smokes. Yeah. It's just names all over Bishop up and down. Yeah, for sure. The Carolina Mudcats are tons of fun. Bishop Letson pitched his high A debut on Saturday and was shove for his first three innings. Just good, really, really projectable and good stuff there. Yeah, there's some names, but the Mudcats are a lot of fun. Oh, by the way, let's throw this in there. If you've listened this long, you deserve a nugget. Jesus Madé missed the last two games. Little bit of a rolled ankle thing, but the Brewers don't see it being an issue. Maybe a few more days, but not necessarily like an injured list thing. But kind of a bummer, I think, for people that were hoping to see him from the jump in stateside ball for the first time. You can watch his games, actually, and he kind of got banged up a little on opening day.
Jesus Madé. Did I not say the name Cooper Pratt? I suddenly feel like I did.
You did not. You didn't say Pratt. You didn't say Patanti.
No. Well, Patanti's struggling a little bit, but he's still very, very interesting. So
Hayden Robinson.
Tate Keener, Mark Manfredi, like let's
sure. Well,
let's
now
go
you're
all
really,
the way in on these
now
guys.
You're really going all the way in, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah, whatever. I'm into it all. The 2023 draft class is going to be remembered for years. Ryan Burchard, did I say him? I don't think I did. Okay, that's enough. We got to stop talking
Hit
about
me.
It. We gotta go. Actually, instead of the future, let's go back to the past. It is our weekly segment of interesting Brewers nuggets from the lore. It's remember when. It's so funny, Kurt, because I looked this up really trying to, like, I didn't really have a good tie to this week, and I was trying to find, in the vein of the 1-0 performance by Nestor Cortez, a great start after a bad start in Brewers history, and it just so happened that I landed on something that later became quite prescient, and that is a unlikely no-hitter being taken deep into a game by a Brewers player, and this is just one of the craziest games in recent regular season history. It involves Dave Bush, and the date is June 19th, 2008. A lot went on in this game against the Toronto Blue Jays. And Dave Bush indeed had a really bad outing. He allowed like 10 hits in 6 innings the game before. It was a 10-2 loss. This time he allows 1 run, 2 hits in 8 innings. It was only his third win of the season. He'd been struggling, but he takes that no-hitter deep into the game. And then some crazy stuff happens. Now, do you remember, Kurt? Because I feel like this game is not remembered for Dave Bush. It is not remembered for the craziness that I'm about to tell you about. What is incident? There's an incident in this game that is the thing that people remember. Do you know what that is?
Inside the park home run by Prince Fielder.
That is correct. Prince Fielder hit a ball that lodged into the wall. Alexis Rios was like, that's a dead ball. The umpire was like, no, it's not. So Prince Fielder paraded around the bases in triumphant fashion. He had 2 career inside the park home runs with the Milwaukee Brewers. That remains one of the greatest stats that ever existed in this game. Russell Branion hit a 3-run homer in the 3rd inning. There's a name for you. It's already 6-0 Brewers at that point. Prince Fielder steps into the box against AJ Burnett, leading off the 5th. It's an inside the park home run. 8-0 now. The Brewers have an 8-0 lead through 5. Bush is cruising. It's still a perfect game through 5 before he walks future Brewer Greg Zahn, leading off the 5th.
What year was Brewer, this? Right? It was this probably future 2000, Brewer. What year was this again?
2008.
Yeah, he was a Brewer like 2 years later.
Yeah, that sounds right. So anyway, leading off the 5th, Greg Zahn walks. The perfect game is over, but Bush then retires the next 6 in a row. So it is a no-hitter into the 8th inning. And future and former Brewer Lyle Overbay steps to the plate, and he triples. Now, Lyle Overbay, not the fleetest of foot. A triple is quite amazing. No, I mean, Ryan Braun made a diving effort on this ball to try to keep the no-hitter intact. It was not a good dive. It was bad. It was not close. It doesn't matter. It was going to be a hit. It ended up being a triple. Bush gets a standing ovation, you know, leaving the field. Rios singled to make it 8-1. But that's it. That's all that happens in the 8th inning. And we go to the 9th, and the Brewers are leading 8-1. And do you know who walks in, Kurt? Who walks into that game pitching for the Milwaukee Brewers?
Tyler Thornburg.
Tim Dillard. Tim Dillard walked in. Now, here's what happened. Matt Stairs singled, former Brewer. Former Brewer Matt Stairs singles. But then Dillard gets 2 ground outs. So Matt Stairs, you know, he's on base, but there's 2 outs. Lyle Overbay actually got an ovation, which I thought was interesting. Again, a very popular former Brewer. So he gets an ovation, and then homers to score Stairs. So actually Matt Stairs would haunt Dave Bush again. There's a no hitter that he took into the 8th in Philadelphia, and Matt Stairs homers. So he broke that one up too. But anyway, that hadn't happened yet. So Stairs actually had gone 0-for-3 against Bush in this game. He scores. It's 8-3. That's fine. But then Rio singles, Zahn walks. I think David Eckstein is in this game. He walks against David Riske, who's checked in. Bases are loaded. Joe Inglet, future Brewer. Joe Inglet hits a grand slam. It's now 8-7 in the 9th. The Brewers have allowed an 8-1 lead shrink to 8-7. Salomon Torres checks in. Salomon Torres has just been named closer in the 2008 season. The Brewers, of course, famously did not have a very good closer for the 2008 season. They had signed Eric Gagne. That did not go well. So Sal Torres kind of saves this team. I think people remember him as the guy who kind of did that. It was the final year of his career. He comes in. He's the full-time closer now. He allows a single to Rod Barajas. That is the tying run on first base. It was 8-1 just a few minutes ago. But then Matt Stairs strikes out swinging against Torres. It's over. Stairs had been a Brewer in 2002. Inglet is a Brewer in 2010. Overbay comes back in 2014. So lots of former and future Brewers involved, but the Brewers win this game 8-7. It's insane. Dave Bush does get the win. He doesn't get the no hitter. It ends in the 8th. You know, a similar vibe to Tyler Alexander, although Tyler Alexander walked out of the game with that no-hitter intact. And then, again, Abner Uribe got a couple more outs, and we saw it lost in the 7th. I do have at JS Online a full rundown of close, near-miss no-hitters in Milwaukee Brewers history. As long as it got into the 7th, I try to document it. There's 36 instances, including the 2 that finished as no-hitters, that the Brewers pitching has taken a no-hitter that far. And that'll do it. That's what we got for Remember When Now. Now we have to close it down the way we always do. And that is with you, Kurt. It is your take of the week. It is Kurt Blanche. Take it away, Kurt.
This isn't even a take, per se.
I don't want it then.
It's just something I just need to say. It's just something about me.
Something about you?
Feeling, an emotion. an event.
Does it involve happening. HBO?
Okay. No, it involves even better TV, but also weekend TV.
Oh.
Duke losing on Saturday night.
Oh, no.
That fixed me.
Fixed you. I don't think you're alone, Kurt. I think a lot of people feel okay about that outcome. What are you pulling off the show? Well,
for the second straight episode, I will pull the picture of myself in a giraffe costume and my friends in Teletubby costumes, including the.
Do you know who else was at that game, Kurt, in 2015? They showed him on the broadcast, Con Knipple, in a Wisconsin Badgers jersey.
Okay, so now maybe I will have a take about this, because the discourse on that has become bothersome to me as well. But the Duke loss, it might have turned my 2025 around entirely.
That's so funny. Like, the vindictiveness is so real.
Like, I've talked about this with my brothers. Do we watch sports because we want success for our teams? Maybe. Or do we watch sports because we don't want other things for the teams that we hate?
The Schadenfreude.
The Schadenfreude. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And obviously, the Duke Blue Devils and their three pals in stripes for the final 20 minutes of the 2015 National Championship game have brought me a level of sadness that, frankly, I'm ashamed to admit I will never fully get over, because the Badgers ain't getting back there again, much less as a student getting to the Final Four, National Championship. A bunch of us had like recently turned 21, shaping up to be incredible. I'm just not going to be ever fully okay. But little things, JR, can fix you just a little bit in the interim. And that's why we live this life. That's why we wake up. That's why we wake up every morning. We think to ourselves, you know what? Maybe today is the day that the Duke Blue Devils hit one field goal in the final 11 minutes and they blow a 6-point lead in the final 30 seconds. I think that's going to make me want to wake up tomorrow. Yeah. So you know what? I had a good time watching it. I'm not afraid to admit it. If we have any Duke listeners to the podcast, I'm not sorry. You got your title. You have multiple. Did you even deserve the 2015? Okay, now I'm really going too far with it. But the con thing and how it fit into Duke also bothered me, because he was clearly wearing a Wisconsin jersey, kid at the Final Four, clearly. But like the way it was, I saw it being talked about online. I was like, wow, he was meant to go to Duke because what, Coach K was in the picture. And it's like, no,
he was meant to go to Wisconsin. Literally, Wisconsin has his name in the title. It's Wisconsin. How did he not go there?
I mean, think about the NIL. Well, I guess we're thinking about NIL opportunities. That's why he went to Duke. Sure. And you know what? Can you blame him?
I don't know what he got, but
a lot of money is a lot of money, and Wisconsin wasn't given that. And also, Duke is, I must admit, they are a good basketball program when they turn a lot of guys pro, and he'll be a lottery pick and probably be a great NBA player.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Wisconsin Lutherans own JR.
That's right.
You love your Lutherans.
I did see him.
You love your Lutheran basketball.
I do love my Lutheran basketball. I did watch him win a state title. I was sitting on press row watching him shoot right in front of me as Wisconsin Lutheran won the Division II state championship just last year. I thought for a long time during his high school career that he was destined for Wisconsin. He was going to be awesome again. Wisconsin now with a K in the middle. Let's see it happen.
I didn't even think about that. Now it just burns.
Yeah. It just was meant to be, and yet it wasn't. That was a tough one. However, Kurt, I'm going to say something that I'm a little worried is going to maybe a little bit of a fissure in our friendship, maybe a little bit of a fracture in our friendship. I kind of liked watching this Duke team. I kind of liked watching Cooper Flagg play. He's awesome.
No, you're absolutely not wrong. I like Cooper Flagg a lot.
Yeah. And I mean, I was pulling for Knipple. I was pulling for the Wisconsinite. I'm a sucker for a Wisconsin storyline, but like I wanted him to do well. He was doing great. He had an incredible year. You know, Tyrese Proctor, Malawach, I was into it. Malawach is 7'3" or 4", whatever. they're a really fun team. And they have a coach who hasn't won a million titles and isn't a whiny. Well, they're all whiny to some degree, but he isn't the guy that got the refs to change their minds about how things were going at halftime of the 2015 national championship. So I don't feel bad about John Shire. I mean, Houston, it's cool too. Like, I'm happy for them. It was just, you know, I wasn't really like partial, but I've enjoyed watching Duke. I've enjoyed watching them play.
It was an awesome game, an awesome Final Four with four, you know, like I despise Duke to my deepest depths, but you were absolutely spot on. Like, I respect this team of them, this squad for sure. So, and a really good team just from like a, you know, a basketball aesthetic standpoint as well. I can see the comments flying in, extreme loser behavior to have these opinions and drop them on a baseball podcast. And you know what? I embrace it because it is. And I will never see the Badgers win a national championship in basketball. So whatever.
I think the people that listen to us primarily are not Duke fans. I don't think there's a lot of crossover. Yeah, I don't know.
Probably a lot of Marquette fans though, who probably actually enjoy
the suffering,
the pain. Yeah, it's fine.
Yes. Whatever. Schadenfreude fuels many, many, many things in this sports realm. Schadenfreude does. And yeah, we'll see. We'll see what's new here for the Milwaukee Brewers. They go to Colorado and Arizona out on the West Coast. Get your late night schedule cooking because they're going to be in the mountains with this pitching staff. You know what? Maybe it's good that they don't have their pitching staff. Obviously, Freddy Peralta is going to be throwing in that series, but maybe it's good that the real pitchers aren't going to have to throw a ton of innings. The guys that they're going to be relying on all year because they're not healthy. I don't know. But a couple West Coast stops for the Brewers. They'll be back home against the Tigers next week. Kurt, any last thoughts before I send you away?
Why do we call it the West Coast trip? It's not a West Coast trip, but like that's what we call it. Neither of these cities or states are on the West Coast.
That's true.
It's just the Rockies aren't even in Western time zone.
No, that's true. Arizona is, I believe, swing out west. I never know what time of year we are with Phoenix and if they are mountain or whatever. I don't know.
We're 2 hours behind now.
Okay, so that's West Coast time. That's going to count as West Coast to me, even though it's not. It borders California, close enough. Colorado, I agree, is really, really just like central United States for a lot of people. So it just feels like it because they're in, of course, the NL West. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Microbrew. Now, stay tuned here. My interview with Chad Patrick, short one, about his first outing as a member of the Milwaukee Brewers. He's from northeastern Indiana, not far from the Chicagoland area. I know this because I went to Valparaiso University. I'm familiar with some of the surroundings there. So we talked a little bit about Hebron, Indiana, and the very many people from Hebron, Indiana, population 3,000. He said he had 300 people here to watch him pitch. I'm sure they don't all live in Hebron, but that would be about 10% of the city's population if they all, in fact, did live in Hebron. So a pretty exciting moment for him. So listen to that. Thank you for listening, everybody. We'll be back again next week. Bye-bye.
My guest is Chad Patrick, new starting pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers. He had a heck of a debut on Tuesday night, as many of you know by now. We're going to go back in time, though. We're going to start in Indiana, where you grew up. You went to Purdue Northwest. I believe you're the first guy drafted out of Purdue Northwest. Were you a first major leaguer from Purdue Northwest as well, or?
I believe so.
Okay.
There's another guy named Colin Willis.
Okay, that made it. Okay. You're the first guy on an opening day roster.
I don't know if he made it, but he was up there. He played minor league.
Okay. So how did you end up there? I mean, you're from Indiana. You're from that area. This is Hammond, Indiana. Were you like, was that your only option, or how did you end up staying so close to home?
Just kind of happened. I was looking to go to school after high school. One of the recruiting coordinators for PNW,
yeah,
his name's Dave Waddell, hit me up, wanted to see me throw, came to a couple games, had me go throw at Dave Griffin's shop, who is the coach at Purdue Northwest.
Okay.
And kind of got offered there right away. Took a visit. Wanted to stay close to home. Wanted to be close to my family. So I was like, this is probably the best fit for me. I wanted to go to a school that I knew I was going to play and develop.
How many people from your hometown were here on Tuesday night to see you pitch? I guess you have to guess.
I threw out a number of 300, and I think it was around 300.
Around 300. So, like, basically all of Hebron, Indiana was here. I mean, no offense to Hebron, Indiana. I know that area well. So that's really, really cool. And when you first got into the Brewers organization, was that a thought? I mean, you're only, you know, it's a little over 2 hours, but not bad to get here. That's not bad compared to, you know, pitching on the West Coast or something.
Yeah, no, it definitely crossed my mind. Just easier travel for my family. The West Coast is just a little harder.
Yeah.
More expensive. But just being able to have family that can drive up here from 2 hours away,
yeah,
is good. So
how close? My understanding is you were pretty sick even going through this outing. How close were you to not being able to go? Was it pretty close, or that's really tough?
I would say I was at 80% yesterday.
Okay.
I mean, I was gonna go no matter what. Something had to like knock me down.
Yeah.
For me not to go. Just too many people were coming. Didn't want to let them down. Didn't want to let myself down. Knew it was a great opportunity for me. And you know, knew the team needed it. And
yeah,
it was awesome.
This is less than 24 hours after that happened, but is there an image or mental memory that you're going to take with you from that outing that really sticks out?
Yeah, I think I was walking off the mound. Just felt like I was back in high school, you know.
Yeah.
Just hearing, you know, all the family, friends, and felt like Hebron.
Yeah, that's really cool. What the cutter that you throw, I've read that you just, it was just termed differently with previous organizations. So did you, I mean, is there now a difference between what you consider your slider, your cutter, or like how has that developed since you've been in the Brewers organization? I guess I'm just curious to know kind of everything about that pitch.
Yeah, first started with the D-backs. They showed me the script, thought it was going to be a sweeper.
Yeah.
Started calling it a sweeper, and then got traded to the A's, and I was actually calling it a slider, but it got traded to the A's. They told me it was a cutter, and I didn't believe them, so I still called it a slider.
Okay. Sure.
And then they traded me here, and we got to spring training, and they were telling me, hey, like, this is a cutter, like, you need to start calling it a cutter. And I was like, okay, I'll start calling it a cutter. And it's kind of changed, you know, the thought of how to use the pitch.
Sure.
So
you were traded for Jace Peterson at one point. He's now with the Brewers. Have you talked to him?
I've introduced myself to him twice. First time was in Chicago.
Okay.
I went and seen a buddy. He gave me BP passes, and Jace walked up. And
okay.
It was just like right after
the
trade.
Hey, I was traded for you.
Yeah. And then I saw him in the hallway, and I reintroduced myself.
That's cool. So that 2023 season, you traded, like you said, from the Diamondbacks to the Athletics. You traded to the Brewers before 2024. Something changed because 2023, the numbers are just okay. And then 2024, you, of course, have this great season at Nashville. Was it a matter of just something clicking? Is it one of those situations? Or was it just sort of the progression of where you were? You were had good process and just needed the results to follow? How would you describe the difference?
I think it just comes down to sticking with a process of developing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start to figure out that hitters are going to get better. Now, once you understand that and start reading swings, start seeing how a hitter reacts to certain pitches, going over scouting reports a little better, paying attention to detail, stuff like that just pays dividends, and it goes a long way.
Yeah. So you've had that great season, and then did you find you had to explain 40-man roster rules to your family a lot to explain why you weren't getting a shot?
I pretty much had to just be like, hey, my time will come. Just be patient. I'm being patient, you know, and we'll get our opportunity there. And, you know, this year we're getting it. So.
And you've told this story to my colleague Todd Rosiak about how you were already packed up. You were ready to go back to Indiana before heading to Nashville. I mean, was that legitimately what happened? Like your car is packed and you're sitting in an Arizona parking lot or something? Like how close were you to getting going before they called you and said, we need you?
Yeah, no, I finished up pitching and we were playing the A's and I was driving back to pack the car up.
Okay.
So, I mean, it was pretty, we had
pretty
it
close.
All set up to go.
Yeah.
Everything was packed up and they told me I couldn't leave and, you know, grateful for that. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. I understand you're an encased meats connoisseur. That is another story that you told Rosie. Yeah. Or maybe not, and maybe this is a story that's going to follow you around for a while, that you would make meats on the Foreman Grill. Do you consider yourself a connoisseur? Is this just something you did for Nashville, or is this like a thing for you? Are you a guy who follows this stuff?
I don't consider myself a connoisseur.
Okay.
just so happened that
you had, you know, a foreman grill.
I was craving a hot dog, and it turned into a little gift from Ashby on a roller, and made hot dogs pregame, and it was it.
All right,
it was just like a good team bonding thing. Like,
yeah,
spread wasn't good. Guys would come up to me and say, "Hey, throw a couple on for me." All right, I got you.
The Mountain Dew hot dog is the one that really fascinates me. I'm like, what is that going to taste like? I didn't know if you were the type of guy to go to every one of these stadiums, like a Dodger dog, you know, like you're going to go to every stadium and compare and contrast. You're not like that at all,
though. No.
Totally. All right. So how do you top yourself in the second start? That I guess by the time people hear this, that will have happened already. But I mean, have you, you know, like, do you see your, at this point, I imagine you expect to make that second start, right, on Sunday?
Yeah, no. I know the Reds have a really good lineup, you know, and just got to stick to what I know, and that's attacking and, you know, trying to get outs.
All right, Chad Patrick, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.